This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
The goal of this podcast since day one is to provide the best information on the Vancouver real estate market at no cost to you, the listeners. To that end, we'd like to thank the following sponsors.
This podcast is sponsored by Marcon, a local family-owned and managed real estate development and construction company that's been around for nearly four decades. Marcon is not only committed to high-quality construction, but it also is making a positive impact in the communities in which it builds, all across the Lower Mainland.
We want to highlight two incredible Marcon projects. Elmwood, a 38-story tower located at Burquitlam's most important intersection, Como Lake Avenue and Clark Road. This landmark tower will feature 335 condominiums, over 37,000 square feet of office and retail space, and almost 20,000 square feet of amenity space. Elmwood has been incredibly popular with 80% sold currently, but they still have a great selection of junior one-bedroom all the way to three-bedroom homes remaining. Check out marcon.ca/elmwood for more.
And Matt, we are also excited about Soane House, Marcon's newest community in West Coquitlam, with 165 homes ranging from junior one beds to three beds. Soane House offers the perfect West Coast aesthetic with a more nuanced Nordic-inspired design. Register today at marcon.ca/soanehouse. That's S-O-E-N-H-A-U-S. Or you can learn more at marcon.ca or follow them at Instagram at Marcon Homes.
Marcon, building for life.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt, today we've got a phenomenal episode because I've been actually waiting for this guest because we've been super excited to have him on. It's Cameron McNeil, Executive Director Partner at MLA Canada.
Yes. We've been hoping to have Cameron McNeil on the show for a very long time. Very excited to finally have him on. Cameron McNeil, of course, it basically built MLA Canada, a real estate marketing firm, huge in Vancouver, but also in other areas across the country, up from nothing, right? He's been in the real estate game here in Vancouver since sometime in the 90s. Talk about having your finger on the pulse of the pre-sale market, the new construction market, but also the resale market. I mean,
sure.
He's got his finger on the pulse across the board here. So it's so good to talk to him today.
If you are an agent who wants to get excited about kind of growing through the market, if you're an investor, if you're just somebody who's a real estate aficionado in Vancouver, this is going to be one for the books.
That's absolutely right. And if you're an agent, Adam, before we cut to our talk with Cameron McNeil, we have a couple housekeeping items here. But if you're an agent,
yes,
Scalina Real Estate and the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast is hiring. We mentioned it last week. We buried it right at the end. Let's be upfront about our need for a new real estate agent for our team right now.
Yeah, and we are definitely hiring. So if you are a new agent or a seasoned agent or an agent who is currently in the licensing process, feel free to get in touch. We don't like to toot our own horn too much, but we are a top producing team in the Vancouver area. So we are very, very busy. If you want to work in a busy environment and if you want to work with top agents, get in touch. And how can people get in touch, Matt?
Yes, you can get in touch by sending us a note with a resume to info@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. And toot, Adam, but it's Scalina Real Estate, pretty good place to work.
Absolutely a great place to work, Matt. And we are biased, but
some of the best guys out there.
Yeah, ranked one of the best places to work in Canada by Secret Scalina. So this is definitely a spot you want to be. Matt, we have to talk about the market because I feel like things are changing right now amidst kind of a little bit of optimism around this planking of the curve.
Yeah, exactly. I think in the last week and a half, it feels like the deep freeze is kind of beginning to thaw a bit here. I'm feeling much more optimistic. I mean, we're hiring. That's right. one sign, right? But we're a couple days off the stats being released for April, but I don't think they're going to be very indicative of what's going on, just like March wasn't, because for the first two and a half weeks of April, it felt like, you know, a great time to get caught up on your Netflix. The last week and a half, 2 weeks, it does feel quite a bit busier out there.
Sure. And you know, we were talking before we went live here. We monitor East Van Detached like hawks. And there's been, just after the weekend here, you know, probably about, I can think of about five or six multiple offers, some of them on places that we didn't think would sell over asking necessarily. And definitely, you know, six or seven offers. There was a house over on Pender, beautiful kind of Edwardian home that was really well done, but sold, I think, over $350,000 over asking or in and around there. So huge, huge activity in the detached market in East Vancouver. We're also noticing, like, we have a one bed downtown that's under contract. And it really comes down to the sub area and the price band. We've been talking to a lot of agents throughout Metro Vancouver who work in other submarkets other than ours, and they're busy depending on the product type, but they definitely have listings that are getting a lot of activity, and they're definitely helping buyers find homes now. So I think you're right. I feel like we've kind of turned a corner here. Not saying that the market is going to be back to where it was per se, but I'm kind of thinking that people are going to have to figure out a way to buy and sell real estate, because you can't put your life on hold forever.
That's exactly it. Like, I mean, with our listings, I would say we've had more calls in the last week than in the month prior to that. And, you know, with your comments on East Van Detached, I would characterize January and February and the first weeks of March as being surprised by what things were listed at, thinking it was high, and then very surprised by what they sold for. And sure, some of these properties that sold over the last week, again, I would say that was exactly how I felt. I thought they were on the high side and multiple offers, and they went over asking. So
it's a rising market, and it still feels like it's a rising market just because inventory hasn't caught up.
Yeah, and the listings definitely have not been piling up. That's for sure. So watch for the stats. We'll have those out to everybody on our email list, including all the sales ratios with the sub areas this week. Once they're released, I think Friday or Monday latest. And what else do we got before Cameron McNeil? Man, we're going on a tear here, Adam. But we still have our sponsor, Oakland Realty.
Yes, Matt, we are sponsored by Oakland Realty, which is the most supportive brokerage out there. It is a great place to be. And if you are a brand new agent and you're looking to sit down with a brokerage, definitely check out Oakland Realty. And also, if you're a seasoned agent and you're thinking, you know what, it's time for a change, oaklandrealty.com/join. And tell the listeners, Matt, what you get.
So this is exactly what you do. You head over to oakland.com/join, type in VRP2020, that's VRP2020, and you receive a free mystery gift.
Yeah, Matt, Oakland is such a great place to be, and the training there is phenomenal. It's super exciting, and really, I mean, just work with the best in the city for sure. But on top of that, the icing on the cake is you get this giant surprise, and I have no idea what it is. No one's told us what it is. They refuse to tell us. I think they're worried we're going to spill the beans.
Exactly. Oakland.com/join VRP2020. Become a real estate nerd like Adam.
Yeah, and just become a general nerd like Matt. But this is really going to be a great conversation. Do we have anything else, Matt, before we get to our interview with Cameron McNeil?
I don't think so. Let's cut to our talk with Cameron McNeil, founder, partner at MLA Canada.
Enjoy. Okay, so we're here with Cameron McNeil, Executive Director and Partner at MLA Canada. How you doing, Cameron?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Adam and Matt?
Very well. Yeah, thanks. Thanks so much for taking the time. And hope you're healthy and staying home.
Yeah, indeed. Quarantined in my den with my trusted dog at my side. And I wish I was with you guys face-to-face in studio, but these are crazy times we're in right now.
Well, hopefully we get to do this again in person at the studio for sure. We'll have to have you back when the craziness ends here. But Cameron, for our listeners, can you maybe start by telling us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, sure. I grew up in Vancouver and went to UBC and met my wife there, and have always lived and worked here in Vancouver. I had the good fortune coming out of business school meeting Roberto Aquilini for the Aquilini Group. And that was an introduction into the real estate development world. I was involved in doing some sales and marketing with them. And this is going back to 1992, so 28 years ago. And that led me to working with the Ani and Amicon groups as in the marketing side of the business. And then when I was 29, I left and started my own company. And the market back in 2000, 2001 wasn't that great. And so kind of so scraping along, and my small business was being incubated out of my wife's office. And a partner joined me a year later. And we had a couple lucky breaks early in the days. Had a good fortune of doing all of Ani's work when we were still in our early 30s. And that was a terrific way for us to grow our portfolio and add a bunch of fantastic team members. And I bought my business partner out in 2008. And then you recall that was the year that the whole market crashed. Right. So that was bad timing for me. And had some good fortune coming out of that recovery of that market. And that company was called Mac Marketing Solutions. And then about 5 years ago, I merged my business with Mac Marketing Solutions with another company called Boulevard Marketing Group. And we changed the name to MLA Canada, which stands for McNeil, Lalonde and Associates. And Ryan Lalonde is the other primary partner of that organization. And now there's four partners in Vancouver and another partner in Fraser Valley. So Susanna Goncalves, Shana McQuestion, and Brittany Reimer are my other three partners today.
Wow, yeah. Fantastic.
So Cameron, you've been on the front lines, or at least, and I guess heading up various companies over the last close to 30 years. We're in a pretty unique moment here. You've been through a number of market cycles and some pretty unique moments, notably 2008. What are your thoughts on the current moment, and how does it, is there any other time that this reminds you of in any way?
Well, you know, it's, I mean, there are some parallels. I definitely learned some lessons in 2008 and was very lucky to be able to come out of that and prosper. And I think that chapter of our business growing, was really driven by a lot of innovation and optimism and faith that the real estate market was going to continue to grow and the city and the region was going to continue to grow. And, you know, we had a systemic global economic problem. It wasn't just a local Vancouver real estate cycle issue. And so I think that there are some parallels, but this is really a difficult time. And I think the real difference is that, you know, people are just really, really scared. And I think this is fundamentally, you know, changing people's behavior and perhaps, you know, for the permanently. You know, I think people are really getting, you know, grounded, spending a lot of time with their loved ones. And so we don't know if this is going to go on for 6 months or 12 months or longer, but certainly I think that, but you know, there's going to be changes that are here to stay. Now, it could be a 5% change or a 30% change, but there's there's definitely a lot of change. And when I hear that, I think about opportunity. I think about creativity. I think about how we can lead the industry forward and really adapt ourselves to accommodate new patterns and new ways people live and act and as their needs change. So I think that there are a lot of interesting things happening right now, and every day is fluid. You know, every day we're just happy to, you know, I think to be grateful that we're here in Vancouver, and you know, that our concern goes to our family and loved ones, and so it's just an interesting time.
Just thinking about that, you know, we've talked to a lot of people who are saying kind of similar things in terms of, hey, this might be change kind of the culture a bit, change the way that you know, we're not going back to the old ways 100%, but there's going to be a new normal. You mentioned new patterns there. Like, are you guys at this moment in terms of opportunities and thinking about how that changes the way people live or make purchases? Are you guys taking a wait and see approach, or is there some indication or ideas right now as to what these changes look like?
Well, I guess to help answer that question, giving a little better context around our business, you know, we're involved in advisory and consulting work throughout the life cycle of a project, from the point where a developer acquires or has a piece of land and they're working through what's their best path forward. And that can be everything from design input to strategy, to highest and best use. And so very early on, we're spending a lot of energy and time to try to optimize the opportunity for stakeholders of that particular project. Then, of course, we get involved in marketing and exposing and educating the public and the potential consumers of that real estate. And then, of course, the transaction, so the sale or the leasing. We do a lot of rental work as well, and then all the customer service work that it needs to be woven into all of that. So those are sort of the buckets we do. And to answer your question, when transactional volume falls off, which is happening now as people are not making major purchases, or they're staying home and distancing themselves from others, the consulting and advisory work is going up. So developers are saying, oh my gosh, what do we do? You know, everything's changing. You know, should we still be planning to open up this summer, this fall, or do we have to delay? And what does that look like? And so there's a lot of a shift in our work, but we're still busy helping our developers with helping them plan and think about the next, you know, 3, 6, and 12 months forward.
Cameron, just thinking about the pre-sale market maybe before COVID. Can we talk about what was happening in the pre-sale market at the you know, late 2019, early 2020?
Yeah, you bet. So as you recall, the market was incredibly red hot all the way through 17 and the first half of 2018. And well, probably going back to 2016, the market was very hot, both in the resale and in the pre-sale market. There was no supply, seemed like insatiable demand. The provincial NDP government ran on a platform of really trying to control that. And it came in with several measures, as you recall, that really were a catalyst to slowing down the market in around May, June of 2018. So the market really slowed down quite dramatically, and we were in a slump for most of 12 months. But the fundamentals below the surface were still so strong. There's still so much immigration into the country. Vancouver being one of the bright spots in the entire country where people want to live and stay or move to. So incredible pressure, and the industry just not able to keep up with that demand by creating new supply. So it was inevitable that the market forces were going to start an upward trajectory again, and that's exactly what happened. Starting in the latter half of 2019, right up to COVID, the market was on a trajectory, and all indications were even March of 2020, where that is going to be a very, very solid month. Month over month, it was getting better and better and better. Prices were already on the rise again. and transactional volume was way up. But of course, if you look at the stats, March was an interesting month because the first 2 weeks were way up and the last 2 weeks were way down. And so it became sort of an average month. April will be the telling month, of course. So pre-sale market followed that same broad pattern. Sales were quite healthy in the last half of 2019 and going into 2020. All of our projects were doing well. I think the only one market that was probably lagging was the real luxury end of the condo market, the really, really expensive downtown stuff. But the broader market, 95% of the market, was very solid.
Mm. And has it just basically, like, we display centers have shuttered and they're not open, obviously, at this point, but they're still open for business. Are you guys seeing much like the resale market that it's basically the last couple of weeks have basically stalled?
Yes, you bet. Since the middle of March right through to the present, now we're in the middle of April. It's been very slow. We don't have the exact stats, but we not only refer to all of our projects, but also all of our peers, and we're monitoring the broader market as best we can. And there's two things going on. There seems to be a very low expectation that a lot of transactional volume is going to happen, that the industry, including MLA, is continuing to engage with our general public and those that are interested. And there is this feeling of long-term interest. People want to buy, and their household needs are changing as people are married or having children or different stages of life, and so their housing needs are still there, and there's still very little supply, but they're just not going to be making a decision in this environment. There's just too much uncertainty about employment and you name it. There's no urgency at all. So we're finding that we're still seeing a reasonable volume of inquiries, and we're trying our best to be able to, as an industry, engage with the consumers. But really, the transactional volume is way down, and our expectations are they're going to remain down for a while. Both realtors and what MLA are doing now is we're really innovating how we engage with customers. There's always been virtual tours and information online, but we are MLA is doubling down on that. We're spending a lot of energy and resources building innovative ways to be able to interact with a one-way information flow, but a two-way interaction with our consumer to be able to, in a virtual capacity, showcase our real estate. But until the broader economy comes back and people start moving back to a little bit more normality in their lives, we don't expect a lot of transactional volume.
Do you think, Cameron, that this in a lot of ways could be kind of the catalyst for moving real estate online?
Oh yeah, absolutely. We already at MLA predicted that in 2020 we'd be selling a real estate with a shopping cart in on a website, so people can actually buy a condo sight unseen, just like ordering a pair of shoes from Amazon. You pay for them, they get delivered to your house. If you like them, you keep them. If you don't like them, you send them back and get a discount. Same idea with real estate. In pre-sale environment, we have a 7-day right of rescission. We think that consumers will make a decision to buy real estate, but then they can go to the presentation center to validate that decision. So we don't think it's going to be 100% of consumers moving that way, but we see a trend going that way. And so we're proud to be pioneering that and leading that. But I think that what we're seeing is consumers are making much more of the decision process, because real estate, one of the major lifetime decisions that an individual or a couple will be making. Much more of that decision making process is happening on their couch versus logistically driving around or going to a sales center or touring projects with a realtor. Much more of that is done independently while someone's sitting in the evening on their couch. So we want to be, in a sophisticated way, educating and providing good information, but also providing an opportunity for people to interact with another human being and have a conversation. So we want to make sure that we've got tools that allow a customer to get much further down the chain, or much further down the line, I should say, before they actually have to get in the car and physically go see it.
Right. And when you were talking about like the current state of the market kind of post COVID-19, can we talk, you mentioned that, you know, for kind of for the foreseeable future, you see this, the market as being quite soft. And we've been asking a lot of people for their kind of crystal ball predictions, and we realize everybody's crystal ball is pretty murky right now. But
yeah.
But any thoughts on kind of like what the balance of 2020 looks like, and maybe when we start to see some optimism or some movement back into the marketplace?
Yeah, I think quite often when we're looking at Vancouver real estate, we have I'm referring to the media, the general public. A lot of the commentary that we hear out there is a very local view. And I think we forget that we're a city that has a global spotlight on it. And yet, in relative terms, we're not a large city. And, Canadian immigration numbers are going from 250,000 people per year just a couple years ago to 350,000 people per year in 2019 and 2020. And over the next 3 years, we're going to have 1 million new Canadians coming into Canada. Canada is a country built on generations of immigration, and it's not going to change. We have an aging population, and our economy needs those immigration force coming into the city, or sorry, coming into the country, I should say. Our Charter Rights and Freedoms allows people to live anywhere they want in Canada. And, many new Canadians or existing Canadians have Vancouver top of their list. And I think that a lot of people that have grown up in Vancouver or currently live here and have a lot of nostalgia about Vancouver, just need to understand that the reason why they love it so much is the same reason why the rest of the world wants to be here. You know, obviously it's an expensive place to live, and people have to make great sacrifices to be here financially. But the, you know, here we are in the middle of April, and it's a beautiful sunny day. We have a stable political environment, and great healthcare, and great education, and fresh air, fresh water, and all the reasons why people from other places and more densely populated places in the world want to be here. And we will have our ups and downs, for sure, as any real estate market and any industry sector has. But the underlying forces are steeply pushing the demand for our real estate upwards. And yet we've got great housing supply constrictions. That strong nostalgia we have is embedded into all of our municipal forces that really create rezoning difficult. Rezoning has always been a real obstacle for us to be able to create a lot of new density. And of course, we're also surrounded by mountains and water and ALR, and we have limited land supply. We can't sprawl like many of our other North American cities. So we have this incredible constraint. We're like an island. We're basically a Manhattan-type environment. And those forces are ultimately what's driving our real estate values. People are prepared to come here and make great financial sacrifices to remain here or to move here. And we just have to understand that that those forces are going to continue to be in an upward trajectory. In our space, where we're involved in the creation and matchmaking of real estate, I have great confidence that over the next 20 years, thousands and thousands of new homes are going to be created, and they're going to be matched with either a homeowner or a tenant. And that's going to continue to flow. How we do it and is going to innovate, and the kinds of homes that we create are going to evolve. But regardless, we're going to need to provide hundreds of thousands of new housing units to serve the Greater Metro Vancouver region in the coming years.
In thinking about the, you know, we talked a lot, this is feels like ages ago now, but when all the policy measures came in, I guess starting in mid 2016 through the following couple of years, that a lot of a lot of the impact of that was kind of reducing demand artificially and therefore reducing supply, and there was fewer shovels going into the ground. And a lot of people predicted that the result of that would be that we'd be in a similar situation again, where there'd just be a lack of supply when you know, the shock of those policy measures wore off. I'd imagine right now you're talking to developers that are potentially thinking of holding off on projects once again.
Yeah, you bet. Matt, that's exactly what happens. So, developer acquires a piece of land, but with looking at a financial performa, they really analyze very carefully what they think they can sell it for, what construction costs are going to be, the availability of construction financing. And these projects can take anywhere from a very short, easy project, might be 3 years, but many of them take 5-6 years by the time rezoning and marketing and construction happens. These very, very long timelines are predicated on assumptions made around the prices they can sell for and the construction costs. And when the real estate market doesn't support those sales values, then the developer is forced to just be patient and wait until the market comes back up. So if there's a broad market slowdown, then the development community simply stops offering new real estate for sale to the market, unless they absolutely are desperate and have to. But the vast majority of developers have the ability to turn off the tap and wait and be patient. And that's exactly what happened in 2018. When the NDP government came in and came in with many of those initiatives that really cooled the market, the development community absolutely just put the brakes on all their projects. So now fast forward to 22, 23, there's going to be, if I want to take these projects to get built, there's going to be a supply constraint. And COVID, of course, the market, as I said earlier, in late 2019 and the beginning of this year, was really an upward trajectory. Many developers were starting to bring their projects back to market again. And then, of course, unfortunately, COVID hit. So the development community broadly is going to be waiting until the conditions make sense again. And you asked me about 10 minutes ago, I didn't answer the question very directly, what's my crystal ball tell me? I don't know. I just know that those supply-demand forces are very strong in favor of continuing to push real estate values upward. And when those supply forces come back into effect, it's probably the latter half of this year. I don't think it's going to bounce, but I think it's going to come back, and people are going to have that long-term optimism about Vancouver real estate. But even if it took into the beginning of 2021, I think that the development community is very capable of just being patient, waiting for those factors to realign again.
Cameron, I'm just thinking about, like, in the resale market for the past 6 months or so, where we've seen, at least based on the 10-year average, some pretty low months of inventory. You know, it's interesting because the last, like, we were gearing up here for a really busy spring. And part of what felt like it was driving it was the fact that we were already in low inventory times. In your mind, how long does it take, actually, like, with the lack of inventory coming online, like, do you see that immediately, or does that take time in the market? And do you think there's a correlation between the measures that were brought starting in 2016 by the BCN or provincial government and the low inventory we've been seeing in the past 6 months?
Well, I think a lot of consumers, particularly in the resale market, they have a perception of what the value of their property is. And if it really comes off, I think people are reluctant to list their properties into that market. They get excited, or they could have substantial debt on that property. And if a home's worth $1 million in their perceived mind a year ago, and now they can only get $800, they're just quite often those consumers are just going to sit tight unless they absolutely have to sell. And so it does, when the market does come off, it does create a supply constraint. Less people are willing to lift into that environment. And so another way to think about it is a thin market, I'll call it, where there's low transactions, but the values are still being held high. That's showing that there's low supply and low transactional volume. A robust market where values are still high has high transactions and high supply. But if you have a market where there's no supply and the demand roars back, that's when you see values really spike upward. So I think it's difficult to know, but I want to caution, the fellow real estate industry that a thin market, even though the values are high, is not an indication of necessarily a broadly healthy market. We need a deep market. We need supply and demand with a healthy volume of transactions to really show us, you know, where the market is sitting at a point in time. If there's only a few sales happening in the market, but they're still holding a value, that just simply is showing that it's a thin market, low supply, a few buyers out there that are prepared to pay for those values. And that's kind of where we're at now. We're seeing a few transactions happening that are still maintaining the values, but consumers and development community alike are not prepared to drop their pricing. They're just prepared to sit and be patient. And of course, there'll be some difficult situations. There might be some households that financially, because of COVID, have financial distress, or a few developers that are caught with some bad timing and they really need to move it. But that's not going to be a broad base indication of what the broader market is really doing. So I think that until we start seeing the supply numbers really come back, we can't easily evaluate where the market really sits. But my prediction will be is as the supply number comes back, the demand will match it. I don't think we're going to see a flood of supply that outstrips demand, which will suppress prices. I think prices are going to remain flat right through this COVID crisis for the next 6 to 12 months, is my prediction, that prices are not going to surprisingly come off very much.
It sounds what you're saying is that sellers need to see, there has to be price discovery, and they have to be able to look at the market and see the values that they want before they're willing to list. And we were seeing it, especially in some submarkets in Vancouver where we operate, we were seeing prices increasing in the first quarter of 2020. Actually, ever since about July of last year, we started to see upward pressure on pricing, partly due to inventory, month over month. And the anticipation, or at least the hope for, I think, a lot of buyers was that this was going to shake loose some inventory. But now it feels like COVID is going to prevent that from happening. If we finally get back to business as usual and we still have these really low rates of inventory, I guess the real question is, will the buyers be there?
Yes. And my belief is yes, there will be. But I think on both cases, both on the supply side and the demand side, I don't think we're going to see a flood of new supply coming to the market, nor a flood of demand coming to the market. I think on both sides of that discussion, people are going to ease back into the market. I think, as I said, I don't know if it's going to happen this summer or in the fall or how long it's going to take, but I believe that the supply side is going to ease back into the market and demand will respond, or I actually predict could even outpace. When I was speaking a few, 15 minutes ago about the global environment and immigration into Canada, Canada, whether it's real or perception, the international perception is Canada is dealing with this COVID crisis quite well. And I think our U.S. neighbors are a real spotlight on how it's being mishandled in the U.S. And whether it's perception or reality, it doesn't matter. The international arena is showing Canada in good light. And going forward into the latter part of 2020, into 2021 and beyond, it's only going to put additional pressure onto Canada. So indirectly, I continue to look at global forces that are driving Vancouver real estate. Our real estate is mostly driven by global forces, albeit not foreign ownership. These are new Canadians that are coming into Canada that are contributing to the broader market. And that is going to come back very significantly as soon as travel brands and immigration are allowed to open up again. And we just simply don't have the housing in Vancouver to support the demand that is going to ensue from that immigration activity. That ultimately is going to, in my view, outstrip the availability of inventory. So the resale market is kind of a rejuggling of the current pool, but we need to create, you know, 30, 40, 50,000 new housing units a year. And recall that it takes 3, 4, 5, 6 years to build a single project. A single tower is 200 units or 300 units. We need hundreds of those towers to be built in the next 5 years, not 10. And unless we can see that volume of cranes building new housing units, then real estate values are going to pressure upwards.
So, Cameron, you're, I mean, a long-term student of the market, and you're advising developers right along the trajectory from the minute the project is kind of considered to the final handing over the keys. Is there a neighborhood in Metro Vancouver or an area right now that you're most excited about?
Wow, that's I get asked that question quite a bit when developers are looking about, you know, acquisition targets. There's a lot of discussion about transit oriented development, or some of the secondary urban nodes that are being developed throughout the Lower Mainland, Surrey Central, Brentwood, Metrotown, Richmond Number 3 Road, for example. And you know, these are exciting areas where what we're seeing now is they're not bedroom communities to downtown Vancouver, but people are actually residing there, working there or working near there. And the dynamics of the city have changed a lot. In the last 15 years, Surrey and the Fraser Valley saw the majority of the people go west for their income, over the Fraser River, work for the day and then commute back home. Now we're seeing that the majority of the people are staying within the Fraser Valley. And so the city is evolving quickly to having these strong, urban nodes where people are working or recreating. And so that changes the dynamic of your question, I think, significantly. People are finding wonderful places to live that don't require proximity to downtown Vancouver. To properly answer that question, I think it depends on the kind of housing we're seeing. I'm proud that Vancouver is one of the highly densely populated cities in North America. There's a real trend towards people wanting to be in less space and having more proximity to amenities outside of their home. People seeing their parks and their coffee shops as their backyard and their living room, and not needing big huge homes like some other cities that have much more space available to them. And so I think Vancouver is by its physical nature appealing to people that want that kind of living environment. And so when asked the question about, you know, where are some of the special neighborhoods that I like, I think it really means different things for different people. I think that some people really do value being in the action or being in very close proximity to retail or transit. And other consumers want a little bit more of an oasis within the Lower Mainland. And they're prepared to be a little bit away from those urban nodes and to have a little bit more of a quiet environment. And there's some really special communities that have that as well. I think the real key to development is to understand, first of all, the customer, what the customer needs. And we call it the target market or the target markets. And if someone's buying, well, if we're designing a townhome community in Burke Mountain, we're going to design homes for a very different household than we are if we're building or designing condominiums for someone in Brentwood. And yet both those markets are excellent markets today. So it's really a difficult question to answer. And it's more about how do we create the ideal home for a particular set, a value set of consumers. And I think what we're also really seeing is some of those traditional ways that we evaluate a consumer based on their demographics, making presumptions around people's buying behavior because of their age or their stage of life. Those are really falling apart now. We're seeing a lot of people at late stages of life that want to be in the urban centers. They want to be close to the action. They want to dine and traditionally we would think that some of those more mature buyers would want more of a quiet location or be away from the action. And so we're really seeing a lot of shifts in the way various consumer groups are perceiving and valuing different set of attributes of homes. But the real art of it is understanding what the desires of the particular group of consumers are and creating housing to meet those desires.
Cameron, maybe, and that's a great way to look at it, but we've got a lot of kind of mom and pop investors that listen to the program. What about like somebody who's just considering making an investment, buying a revenue property in Metro Vancouver? Do you have any areas that you're kind of excited about from an investment perspective?
Well, as you've gathered from other themes of this conversation, I'm a long-term thinker when it comes to real estate. And that's why I have an optimistic view of Vancouver. If we measure it month over month, it's like watching our Canucks. It's difficult. And I think that when we're looking 3, 4, 7 years out, that's the time horizon that an investor should be thinking about when they're buying real estate. So many things come into play for your question there. One is yield and one is appreciation. So how important is generating yield? That is, how much revenue can you create versus the price you're paying versus which one is likely to appreciate the most. And those are, in most cases, not correlated. Usually the market is smart enough to understand where those hot areas are that are really going to perhaps appreciate in the next decade. And as a result, people are paying a premium over those for those locations compared to the yield that they deliver. So people, the investor needs to, I think, weigh where they want to be in that. Are they prepared to accept a lower rent for that potential appreciation versus would they rather get a better yield? So if someone is leaning more towards what are those hot areas that are going to appreciate, I think it's really difficult to say there's an undiscovered area or an area that's a real sleeper. I think that the patterns that we're seeing with investors is that they're buying geographically much further than they were even 10 years ago. 10 years ago, an investor was buying in the neighborhoods that they knew or were most comfortable with. Now we're seeing investors are scouring the entire Lower Mainland and could live in the west side of Vancouver and prepared to buy an investment home in Surrey. Where 10 years ago, that was much harder for us to see. Some of the markets that I think people could look at could be some of the secondary markets. Markets even as far as Squamish. If we think ahead in 10 years and what's happening with COVID and people being prepared to work from home and people's patterns changing and ride sharing and just a real different the way people are dependent on transit, that my view is that's going to become less of a factor moving forward. I think that places such as I mentioned Squamish, I'm thinking about Steveston in Richmond or Port Moody, some of these areas that have great grassroots communities, I think that they're less obvious. They're not like buying right in the heart of Metrotown or right in Brentwood. Now, I'm going to contradict myself though. You're buying in Metrotown or Brentwood or downtown Vancouver. You're really buying blue chip locations. These are locations that if you need to rent it out, you're going to get 100 people showing up, all with applications, within the first hour, you know, right on transit, very accessible. The cities identify these locations as high density locations on purpose because of their strategic location throughout the Lower Mainland, and they will always be demanded, but they are a little bit more commoditized. So when they're commoditized real estate, whether you're reselling your home or you're a tenant looking for a home, there's numerous choices that are similar. If you go to some of those secondary locations, the real estate is less replaceable and more unique. So I think those are some of the factors that I think customers should be thinking about. But nevertheless, I have great faith in investing in real estate in Vancouver long term. I think that you know, you have to look at the political environment, property taxes, some of the expenses that are going to impact yield, and I think you just have faith that you're going to make a good long-term decision. If it's of interest, but one of the amazing things that I think is often missed in the development world from the general public's perception of it is, we need to pre-sale a portion of our project in order for banks to give construction financing.
Right.
And as I think you guys know, typically in a typical real estate project, the industry needs to sell roughly 50% and quite often more, 50, 60% of a project in order for the bank to say, oh, okay, you've de-risked the project. We see that the market will accept it at these values. And you have a group of buyers that are prepared to buy it and have put up deposits. And therefore now we will start to give you construction financing. And at that point, the developer can start construction. And why this is really important is because the development community often sells those initial homes to investors because these homes aren't going to be finished for 4 years. And homeowners that are going to occupy their own homes typically need housing sooner than that. Hypothetically, a young couple and they're wanting to start a family, they're thinking about what their needs are in the near term, and 4 years out is too far down the road. And so the investors are really, really, really critical to kickstart those projects. And in the past, in 2015, 16, 17, I think that there was a lot of perception and media attention around people buying and flipping real estate. And what most of those investors that invested in those projects in the pre-sale stages of those projects and really kickstarted them, well, they were necessary to help that supply come into our province. And without them, that supply would have never have happened. And the reason why they have signed it is because the market had really escalated rapidly. And so many of those investors were prepared to sell and take some profit, but that wasn't their original intent. They weren't speculators or intending to flip. They bought with a long-term intention, the majority of those investors. And so, going forward, we're going to continue to need the investment community to purchase real estate in order to kickstart real estate projects, and that's just a natural required force, and that's really a banking issue. I think if banks were prepared to lend without any pre-sale tests at all, developers would happily do that. The developer community believes in 3 years from now, the real estate market is going to be higher than it is today because of those market forces I shared earlier. So if developers could get bank financing to kickstart projects today, we would be seeing projects, even in this COVID environment, start construction. In 3 years, developers would sell them at completion. So we just have this banking environment that requires us to sell a large portion of the real estate up front. And without those investors, we simply would not have those projects manifest.
Yeah, we've talked about it on the show before, but it is interesting how, you know, demonizing kind of individual investors who are essentially helping to finance the building of new homes a new supply for Metro Vancouver. It's a weird, I mean, there's a lot of people who have been demonized, but that one's always been one of the more surprising ones. Like, hey, you're willing to put up some money to get this thing built. Shame on you.
Yeah, exactly. And I also think it's crazy that there's so much attention on foreign ownership. I think it's wrong that people can keep homes vacant. So I think that the vacancy tax was a healthy thing. Although what we learned from introducing that tax, it was not that of a large supply. It really didn't make that much of a difference at the end of the day. But whether it's foreign ownership or not, I don't know what the difference is. If you're a pension fund based in Toronto buying a rental building in Vancouver versus an offshore owner buying one condo in Vancouver along with 100 other investors, in order to allow that project to be built to create housing supply, which will be rented out to tenants. In both those cases, whether you're XYZ pension fund in Ontario owning a building or you're 100 offshore investors, both of those scenarios are allowing that real estate to exist for tenants.
Right.
And that's what we really need, is we need housing supply.
Cameron, maybe shifting gears a little bit, is there industry advice that you hear all the time? You know, almost the rote type of advice that you really don't agree with?
Oh, wow. You have to think about that one. You know, I think that I don't know if I'm directly answering it, but I think that one of the key frustrations that I have, I think, is the incredible resistance that Greater Metro Vancouver has in virtually every municipality around new density. And I think that our municipalities do as good a job as they possibly can juggling all the special interests of the existing residents and businesses with the need to density, but they're really trapped. And I think that many of the governments are really thinking about their term or their next election, and they're really not thinking what's the long term plan of the city. And I see a lot of tension between planning departments and between the politicians that are in the spotlight, and I really don't see this sort of orchestrated plan to bring density into the city in a significant way. When I say the city, I'm talking about all the municipalities that make up Greater Metro Vancouver, not just City of Vancouver. Part of the problem is we have such a fractured group of municipalities here. You know, we have, I think, 17 different municipalities that make up Greater Metro Vancouver. Each of them, it doesn't want to bear the brunt of density. And, you know, you've got District of North Vancouver that hasn't approved one project since it came into term 2 years ago. It's absolutely ridiculous that they're not prepared to take any density whatsoever. And the whole region needs it. So there's not a holistic plan. And so I think the biggest frustration I have is this real allergic reaction to density. And you know, the irony of that is the more as an overall community we resist density, the more prices are going to skyrocket. Prices are just going to go up. And the government can't artificially keep prices down without really hurting the quality of the city. Rent controls, you know, create long-term problems. The only way to keep people from coming into the restaurant is to make the restaurant less attractive. You can't just simply say to the lineup on the sidewalk, okay, you know, if you're a past patron of this restaurant, you get front of line access. Everyone else, you're not wanted. And so we absolutely, you know, if we keep prices down in the restaurant, more people want to come because it's a great value. If prices go up, well, it upsets everybody except for those that can afford it. And so it's sort of, you know, the only way to do it is to expand the restaurant. Or people are going to have to find a new restaurant to go to. People are going to have to move to Nanaimo or Kelowna or other centers. We just simply can't contain this incredible place to live by curtailing demand.
That's a great analogy there. I've never heard that one.
You know, I think there's so, you know, I'm gonna keep with the analogy. There's so much nostalgia about Vancouver. This is the frustrating part. You know, if I was growing up with my parents and going to this great little Italian restaurant, and you know, you knew the waiter, and you know, prices were, you know, $9.99 for a big plate of pasta was phenomenal. And over time, it changes. You know, and there's empty. You could call and get the best table in the corner every time, and certain, you know, soon that changes, and the tables are not available, and then. And so they expand the restaurant one day, and you know, they relieve a little bit of that pressure for a while. But then the restaurant, you know, eventually, this is just going to continue. There'll be a time, you know, it's a silly little analogy, but we just as a city need to realize that, you know, it's not a closed system here. That a million Canadians are coming into the country in the next 3 years. And a lot of them want to live in Vancouver. And a lot of people that live in Vancouver want to stay in Vancouver. And those, that's a natural pressure cooker. And unless we create more supply, that pressure cooker has only become more intense. And I think that government needs to think about it quite clearly like that. I think by pulling on all the levers of taxation and rent control does nothing more than hurt existing residences as much as it does scare away people that new Canadians that would like to live here but are going to choose other locations. And so we have to decide, do we want employment here? Do we want the employment that is going to occupy all the new office spaces being built in downtown at the moment, for example? And in order to accommodate all that, the only answer is supply.
It's interesting. Like we had Gil Kelly on the program not too long ago talking about Vancouver, the citywide plan or the city plan, I guess, where basically what the city of Vancouver's trying to do right now is to get some kind of a cohesive plan, not necessarily to replace community plans, but to bring them more together. And it sounds like part of your frustration is that, you know, in thinking about Metro Vancouver versus all the municipalities, there's no cohesion. And even if you might have the gates open to the development community in one municipality, we need it in all municipalities.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think intention and dialogue is feeling like it's going the right direction. The city of Vancouver, pats themselves on the back and does a press conference when they approve a small rental project of less than 100 units. Let me be clear. We need tens, if not hundreds of thousands of new units in the next 5 years, not 100 at a time with a press conference. We need 30, 40,000 units a year just to keep up with demand. If we want to tip the affordability, if the municipal interest or the government, provincial or municipal interest is to actually create it more affordable, we need that supply to exceed that demand. So you know, they're not even scratching the surface of really what we need. When I say they, I'm referring to all the various municipalities. We need significant housing supply created. And, you know, and I guess my fear is that even if we create more housing supply, that's just going to create more accessibility to current Vancouverites or new Canadians, and all of those seats will be filled as well. So, but certainly the constrained supply that we have now is only putting long-term pressure on values upward. So, right back to your investment question, I don't think we're going to solve this problem in the next 5 years to 10 years. We have such a fractured approach through all the municipalities, such a resistance to density, and these are deeply rooted things within all the municipalities and all the communities. There's going to be supply constraints. The other piece that we have is incredible red tape. It takes up to 2 years to have a project approved today, compared to 10 years ago, it would be less than half that time. We got long timelines, more risk as a result of these uncertain timelines, and investors can be confident that there's always going to be that supply constraint, and so that's going to help them with appreciation potential.
Yeah, it's interesting that the the fractured kind of nature of politics in the different municipalities, it almost rewards a status quo in a lot of cases, right? I mean, North Van, like from a supply perspective, it's like it doesn't make sense. But when you think of Port Moody versus Coquitlam, say, and how it seems like Port Moody's really dragging their feet, the politicians are likely being rewarded by a lot of the longtime residents there. So it makes sense on a political kind of from a calculation that way. But yeah, it's a problem, and I think I at least agree with you, and I'm sure Adam, based on our conversations, you would as well. It doesn't seem like we're going to sort it out anytime soon.
Not on this call, probably.
Well, let's take the next 5 minutes. We'll sort it out and just
in time for lunch.
It's definitely an interesting problem. But back to consumers of real estate in Vancouver, or owners of real estate in Vancouver, or people that are involved in the professional services of it. I do know that despite the fact that we're right in COVID and it's going to take some time for us to get out of it, that if I could kind of summarize my theme here is that there's going to be great pressure on Vancouver real estate in the long term. And the way that the international arena is looking at Canada today is only elevating us relative to other places on the planet. And therefore, those immigration forces are not going to be curtailed at all. Any delay in immigration that happens in 2021 is going to rebound in 2021. So this immigration delay is short lived, and therefore that demand force is going to be there. And yet there's incredible constraints on our ability as an industry to bring new supply forward. But I do know that over the next decade, that MLA's role in the industry to help developers create the most exciting real estate possible, to educate the public about it, and to matchmake it with a consumer, that's going to become even more well, that's going to continue to be very robust industry for us. But being creative and being innovative and embracing, I think just the new consumer behaviors and things like that is going to be also important. So I just have great faith that tens of thousands of new homes are going to be built in Vancouver, but still not going to be able to keep up with the demand that we're going to see.
Yeah, it's interesting. I agree with you wholeheartedly. And I think that the one thing that this will do for our industry is make it more resilient for dealing with ongoing crises like the one we're in, so that we have better tools in front of us as well.
Yes, agreed.
Cam, maybe we'll leave it there, but we have this segment called the Five Wire, five quick questions about Vancouver and yourself. Can you stick around for that?
Yes, you bet I can.
Okay. So first question is, what is your favorite neighborhood in Vancouver?
Oh, okay. So I think there's so many special neighborhoods throughout Greater Metro, but I have to be biased to my neighborhood. I live in the Kerrisdale area, and the cherry blossoms are out, and lots of parks and trees, and great place to walk. I also love how it's changing. There's lamely houses coming in, and new families coming in, and I think it's just a really terrific place because of a combination of that and also accessibility. It's close to downtown, close to the airport, close to UBC. So I think I'd have to go with that one.
Right on. Favorite bar or restaurant?
You know what? My office is downtown on Homer Street. Right beside us is the Homer Street Cafe, and I love it. It's just comfort food. Great place to go for lunch or dinner or have a glass of wine, and they're even open. I can sneak in there and have a coffee and have a meeting with somebody as well. So I think I'll have to go with that one.
What's one
book? That's a first.
Yeah, actually, that is a first, but that's a great one. What's one book that you would recommend that our listeners read?
Oh gosh, I think one book I'd read. You know what? Instead of going to all the business books, I'm going to go with. I love history and historical fiction. So I don't know. I think I would probably lean towards something in that world. You know, Ken Follett's got a whole bunch of them. Pillars of the Earth is very interesting, for example.
Interesting. Okay. I'm making a note. one piece of advice you would give your 18-year-old self?
Oh, well, I've got a 17-year-old son and a 19-year-old daughter. So right in the middle. You know, I think this whole COVID crisis has been incredibly grounding, and I think it's been fantastic for our family to spend all the time together and see the dynamic between my kids, which sometimes they're each other and sometimes they're best friends. And I think any advice that I could give myself over again at 18 is really to slow down and appreciate those things, appreciate my family, appreciate meals together, and that connectivity that is just irreplaceable.
And the final question, Cameron, is what is something that you've purchased for under $1,000 that's changed your life?
For me, this is easy. My entire life from the age of 20, halfway through university, I've had a journal in my pocket. And the journal has changed in size because of going from a school bag to a suit jacket, but it goes wherever I go and I never miss anything. So over the years, I've spent everything from $3 to $100 for a fancy leather one. But what's changed my life the most is that journal goes wherever I go. And I have the same system. The front half is my day-to-day activity, and working from the back to the middle is ideas, thoughts, capturing quotes, anything that moves me, inspires me. And I have it going back for more than 30 years on my bookshelves.
It's funny. One of the questions, yeah, that's a fantastic one. But one of the questions we actually had for you that we didn't get to, just because we've ran long, was what was one of the habits that you've implemented in your life that's had a huge transformative impact? And sounds like journaling is definitely it.
Yeah, I and it's funny when you work with one, you can even recall. You can say, oh, you know what? I remember roughly back in 2008, when I was absolutely in the darkest place and had to make those very difficult decisions to lay off some people, what was going on in my heart? And I can go back and I can refer to that. And I still keep that. It's not a to-do list. It's not just a list of my day's tasks that I check off, but it captures my goals and everything like that. And I recall going over with my son, because he's 17 at his stage of life. I recalled showing him my university ones, my goals, and he had a bit of an aha as well. And so for me, I think that was probably the one habit that impacted me the most.
Wow, that is a great one, and the first. Well, thanks so much, Cameron, for your time. That was a phenomenal conversation. And I think our listeners will take a lot from it. So thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, Adam, Matt, thanks again for all your time today. I appreciate it. And sorry we couldn't do this in studio, and we're doing it over the phone, respecting social distancing. I don't think it's called social distancing. It reminds me of social isolation. It's called physical distancing.
Right.
But guys, thanks so much. I really appreciate this happening today.
Yeah, absolutely. And Cameron, I just want to, just for people that are looking to find out more about what you're doing and of course, MLA Canada, how can they do that?
Yeah, our website is mlacanada.com, and we list our projects, and we have a good news feed in there with commentary and news releases and things we're working on as well.
Well, thanks again, Cameron.
Fantastic.
So there you have it, folks. Our discussion with Cameron McNeil, Executive Director, Founder, Partner at MLA Canada. We went long with Cameron McNeil, and also we had like this crazy phone mishap. I was on my front porch, south facing, so much sun, so sun-drenched, in the words of realtors everywhere, that my phone actually, for the first time that I've ever had this happen to me, overheated, and it just shut down. It was like, you've reached...
Overheated in April. Kind of,
yeah. Talk about sun-drenched. I know.
That is sun-drenched.
I'm already starting to market this place, not thinking about selling, but that sunlight. Anyways, but we lost Cameron. We got him back on. What a great conversation. And so happy we finally had him on the show. And you know what else happened with Cameron, which was really great, Matt? I don't know if you recall, but he did commit to coming to a Vancouver Real Estate Live when we are free from this physical distancing. And he's going to join us, have a couple beers at the Vancouver Real Estate Live event, which we have no idea when the next one's going to be, but I'm so excited.
Yeah, you know what? Those Vancouver Real Estate Lives, I miss those. That's on our YouTube channel, Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I would head over there and subscribe just in case we have one without even telling anyone. But yeah, that's going to be a good time with Cameron and McNeil. That is for sure. What else do we got before we go, Adam? Well, we should reiterate, if you're still here and you're an agent, seasoned, new, aspiring, we are hiring at Scalina Real Estate and the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. Get in touch at info@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com. We also have our website for everybody listening, vancouverrealestatepodcast.com. Head over there for all things real estate, such as resource tools like, and we haven't done this in a while, Adam.
I'll see if
but
I can
we're going to do it again because we're feeling so optimistic right now. Like private client services.
Matt, if you are not using PCS, you are standing still while the rest of us power walk by with face masks on, of course. You get sold prices, you get days on market, you basically get realtor level information at your fingertips. It's free, it's available at vancouverrealestatepodcast.com. Seriously, there's absolutely no reason you shouldn't be using PCS to search for real estate in Vancouver.
If you're not using PCS, you're doing it wrong. We also have the Livewire that has the deal of the month. It's sending out stats, all sorts of really useful information, whether you're at home or back at work. You'll want to be on the Livewire for sure. That's at vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
Yeah, Matt. And again, we're still, everyone should be staying home. You know, we're still on lockdown here and we are as well. You and I currently on a phone call here. We're not in the same room.
Hey, we're on a phone call. Hey, this is how at home I am. I put on jeans and a button down shirt today. And my kid literally said to me this morning, "Why so fancy?"
Oh,
that's
and then you put on a polo tie and then she was like, "Okay, there's my dad."
Yeah. Virtual chili cook-off. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. But you know what the thing is that here's what it is in a nutshell. We can still do showing. We have Matterports. We have virtual tours. We have vacant properties where we're taking measures, obviously the same distancing measures, physical distancing measures that are in place. We can do this safely if you do want to see real estate, if you have to buy or if you have to sell. There's ways to market your property, and it's actually quite impressive the way that the industry has come together with some of these new technologies to adapt and overcome.
Absolutely. So if you want to talk about new technologies, overcoming real estate, anything else, I'm at home and awaiting your call, 778-847-2854 or matt@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or adam@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
We also got that secret line.
Yeah, if you're not looking to talk about overcoming and optimism and you just want to have a good pout, info@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com. He's all yours.
I heard he got a Nintendo Switch, so we may never see him again.
I'm just wondering, does Switch have to be online? Because I'm not sure you can get Wi-Fi in that bunker.
All right. Have a good week, guys. We'll be back next week. Take care.
2,000 Spaces for Radio. Subscribe today.
We'll be right back.
Hey, everyone. Pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible.
This podcast is sponsored by Common Ground Consulting.
Are you developing in the Lower Mainland? Common Ground Consulting is a development management and consulting company with experience in single family, townhouses, multifamily, and commercial developments.
What I love about Common Ground, Adam, is they manage the whole development process, from due diligence and feasibility reports for initial purchase of land to completing rezoning, development permits, and building permits.
They streamline the whole process with strong relationships with sub-consultants and municipalities and a deep understanding of all city requirements.
Common Ground Consulting. Feasibility and efficiency prioritized every step of the way.
Learn more at commonground-consulting.com or 604-807-6419.
We are also sponsored by Oakland Realty. This is our real estate brokerage, best brokerage in the city, hands down. If you are in the industry, a new agent, an aspiring agent, somebody just looking to make a change, new culture, new energy, new resources, head over to oakland.com/join, type in VRP 2020. That's oakland.com/join, type in VRP 2020. Not only do you get to meet Michael Morgan and the gang, the bigwigs over at Oakland, you get a huge incentive for first going to oakland.com/join, typing in VRP 2020.